Welcome. This is the Tech Reformation, where the world of technology meets the worldview of Christianity. I'm Ben.
I'm Craig.
And this is Tank.
Okay, guys. I have a story this week.
Yay! Great.
In 12 hours, around 12 hours, I will be in Eastern Europe.
Is that including flight time?
Okay, maybe it's not 12 hours. I don't know. By the time this thing goes live, I think I'll be in Eastern Europe.
Nice.
That's cool.
What country?
Serbia.
Where's Serbia?
Serbia is in the Balkan region.
Balkan?
Yeah, like the former Yugoslavia.
Oh, not like Spock?
No, that's Vulcan.
Yeah, that's what I asked.
Yeah, not the Vulcan region. That's like a planet, I think.
So, Ben, what are you doing there?
I am going on a mission trip.
Explain a bit more information. What are you actually doing
on
your mission trip?
What does mission trip even mean nowadays?
That's right.
So I'm doing this discipleship program called Downline, which I've probably mentioned before. And they really just teach you how to make disciples as a lifestyle for a lifetime. That's kind of the phrase, the catchphrase. But the point is, like, Matthew 28, Jesus says, go therefore and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit, teaching them to observe all that I've commanded you, and behold, I'm with you always to the end of the age. Right? The Great Commission. We're always familiar with this one. But I realized a few months ago that we don't actually realize what it means. So, like, let me just do this real quick. How many command words are in that passage I just quoted, guys?
Four.
There are four, yes. And what are they?
Go, make, baptize, teach.
That's right. And which of those, one, two, three, or four, how many of them are imperatives in the original Greek? How many of them are commands?
Oh, man.
Just each of you answer on three. One, two, three. Say your number.
Four.
Two.
Okay. Tank says two. Craig says four. Okay. So the words are go, make, teach, baptize.
Pretty sure those aren't the Greek words, but anyway.
Yeah, they're not. Actually, only one of them, one of those four, is a command. It's an imperative in the Greek, and it's make disciples. So it's not about how far you go or where you go, but it's what you're doing where you are, making disciples. That's the point. And so Jesus is saying, you saw what I did for the last 3 years with you. Go do that with other people. That's what he's saying. Make disciples. And it's amazing to me, I did not know this until 3 months ago, and it's amazing to me how many people don't realize this, because, like, that's the last thing Jesus said. Like, that's what we're supposed to be doing right now, and we don't have a handle on that, even just what he was saying. So anyway, that's what Downline's all about. I'm going with them on a trip to Serbia to teach students, first and second year students, in a Bible college there. It's called the Hub School, and it's the only Bible school in the whole Balkan region. And it's super connected to all of the evangelical churches there. So there's like 0.09% evangelical Christian there.
So you've been studying at seminary for how long?
A couple months.
And you're teaching at Bible college already?
Yes.
Put that on the
resume.
Isn't
that crazy? So yeah, I have to teach a couple hours of Joshua and 1st and 2nd Thessalonians. And then three other guys that are going with me are teaching even more than me.
Nice.
But yeah, we're just teaching the Bible and been doing a lot of studying for the last, like, month or so. It's awesome.
How did you get those? Like, did you choose those, or were you assigned those?
No, so at the school, in their first year in Serbia, they go through the Bible, and this just happens to be where in November they're at, and so we picked up the ones that they're learning, they would be learning next. So,
I think Michelle's least favorite book of the Bible is Joshua.
Really?
Wow.
Why is that?
She does. She doesn't like the stories because she wants God to come and say that's wrong, you know? And a lot of the times he doesn't. It's just like, this happened. And it's clear that it's wrong, but she doesn't like a lot of the stories. Okay, yeah, I just got confused. Judges is the one that Michelle's not a fan of.
Okay, that makes a lot more sense now.
Sorry about that. Joshua's all good.
Yeah, well, yeah, except for the Holy War. Most people have a lot of problem with that, but it comes easier if you start from the presupposition Jesus started from. Like, the rich young ruler comes to him and says, good teacher, what must I do to inherit eternal life? And he says, why do you call me good? No one's good but God. So, like, if you start with no one's good but God, like Jesus, then it's not hard to understand these things.
That's right. Yeah. Total depravity, in other words.
Yeah.
So why Serbia, Ben, just quickly?
Yeah, it's because one of my really good friends here called me a month ago and said, hey, we're going to Serbia in November. You want to go? And I was like, maybe. And he said, well, we need to know in 24 hours. And I said, nice. All right, let me talk to Anna, my wife. We talked about it and we prayed about it and we were like, yeah, let's do it. And so honestly, why Serbia? It's just because that's the opportunity that God put before us. And we were like, sure, why not? We can do it. And we can take off vacation. We can pay for that or raise money for that or whatever.
Cool. So, sounds good.
Yeah. Sorry. It's not a super spiritual reason to go to Serbia specifically, but
no, it's fine. That's a good answer. I wasn't expecting some I put a fleece out 5 times.
The fleece was wet, but the ground around it wasn't. So. And the fleece was also in the shape of the country of Serbia. So it's really obvious. I don't think I could even draw Serbia actually shape-wise, but anyway.
Maybe next week, Ben, you could, or the week after, whenever you're back from Serbia, you could run a Serbia trivia game and we'll see how that goes.
Maybe.
That'd be fun.
We are so far off the tech topic right now, we should really get back onto that.
You guys want to do tech you should know?
Love to.
All right, 7 things you should know in 7 minutes. Here we go. Number 7. Okay. I don't know how good this statistic is. Twitter is saying that their like button is already 6% more popular than their favorite button.
Yeah. I wonder how they figured that out.
It's stale because we've already talked about it.
It would be their analytics were telling them that, right? But obviously when they make a change, you would kind of expect a little bit of a spike. And it's not like it's 80% more popular or even 50% more popular. It's 6%, which is not that huge a number. And I think it could well just be because it's new and people are going, ooh, a love heart. I'll click on that.
307 million users are on Twitter. I just Googled it.
Nice.
So what's 6% of that? Around 15 million.
There we go.
Right? 300, 10% of that's 30, half that is 15, that's 5%. Cool.
That's good math.
All right.
Right there.
Speaking of 6, number 6 this week, Apple Music debuts for Android. It's out. It's available. You can get it. Apple's making Android apps now.
Oh, for Android? I didn't even catch that.
Yeah, it's been out for iPhone for like 2 months or a month. That's month cool. and a half.
Yeah. Nice. I will continue using Spotify, but it's cool.
Oh, man. Number 5, Firefox is available on iPhone.
Yay. I'm keen on this one. Although, I do like it. I downloaded it this morning and had a bit of a look. I tried to do some speed tests on it, and it was hard to tell if there was much difference between that and Safari. I don't think there is a huge amount of difference, maybe a second or a little bit less. It's cool. It's another good option for those people who, for whatever reason, don't like Mobile Safari.
I switched back to Mobile Safari.
From Chrome, I guess?
No, I was actually just using the Google search app because you can say, okay, Google.
Oh, yeah.
And it had Google Now.
The only thing I don't love about the Firefox app is the layout of it feels a little bit like it's still trying to mimic a Google regular browser. No. Like a regular tabbed browsing experience.
Yeah,
so like
it is.
The tabs across the top kind of with the little number of how many tabs you've got open. And the functionality of it works fine. Like when you tap in, it kind of zooms out to little thumbnail squares of what you have and then you tap whichever one. I kind of almost like that better than Safari's 3D top-down view of all your pages and then you flick through. Just because it seems like it might be a little bit quicker to visually see what things are. But, yeah, I think in normal mode, it's kind of takes up, I don't know, it just looks a bit like a desktop.
Number 4, Facebook Messenger is adding fast sharing with facial recognition. So it realizes who you took a picture of, and it says, hey, don't you want to send this to them?
That's cool. Or creepy. Cool. Not sure.
Yeah, it's kind of creepy. Not creepier than Google Photos, though.
That can know your baby.
Yeah. Number three, also from Facebook, they launched a new app called Notify, which is like mobile notifications around news, sports, weather. You can subscribe to places like CNN or your favorite sports team, and it'll just send you push notifications for what it thinks you care about.
Have you found any good ones for global news, like important global news?
No, and I've been looking for at least a year.
Yeah, I've always wanted to know a good one, never found one.
What about Flipboard? Did you guys ever use Flipboard?
Nah.
Hate it.
Hate it? Why do you hate it, Ben?
I just feel like it really tries to... It tries so hard to show me stuff I care about, and I just really don't care. Like, I'm sorry, that's it.
Is that its fault or your fault?
I don't know. That's the struggle with all of them. Maybe I'm the problem. I am definitely the common denominator here, like with the to-do apps. But I just feel like they're trying so hard to show me only the information I want to know, and they're failing so epically.
Oh.
Yeah, I reckon maybe the common denominator has something to do with it.
Could be. Could be. Could be. All right, the number two thing you need to know this week, Google has launched YouTube Music. And this is important because YouTube, actually, believe it or not, is the number one music streaming service there is, even before YouTube Music launched today. That's the place where people go to check out music. If you're like, hey, this new song's great, you want to hear it? Typically, you'll go to YouTube.
So what is the deal? Is it like a separate... It's the same URL, but it's just a category? Or is it like a separate website? Or how does
it... It's a separate app.
Right. Okay, so it's an app. But online, you would still just go to YouTube and type in whatever song and it would come up.
It's part of YouTube Red, which is the $10 a month service we talked about a while back.
Okay. Yeah.
Is it a separate app? It's a separate app, right? Is it a separate app?
You're the news guy.
There is a music.youtube.com. I just searched.
Yeah, just it's like a separate app.
Gaming.youtube.com.
Okay. Yeah, I was pretty sure. It's a separate app. I just found it on the App Store. It's also on Google Play. Here's my thing, though. They already have Google Play Music All Access. I don't understand why they keep doing stuff like this.
Mm-hmm.
Google just likes to step on its own feet.
Mm-hmm. I think they're trying to protect two different brands, which I suppose, I'm guessing. I don't work for Google, but I guess they're trying to provide it easy access through their Android devices and yet also have it available for regular users. But yeah, I don't know.
Google is like a drunken octopus trying to two-step. All right, Tank says we're out of time. So number one, T-Mobile will let you stream Netflix, HBO, and ESPN, and I think some others, without hitting your data cap. This is insane.
What's T-Mobile?
T-Mobile is a cellular service provider in the U.S. They are the third largest behind AT&T and Verizon. I think AT&T is the biggest. I'm not sure. Then Verizon, then T-Mobile, then Sprint, and no one uses Sprint. If you use Sprint, mm-hmm. email us and tell us why you keep using Sprint.
That's ask at techreformation.com.
All right, fine. Well, anyway, T-Mobile has been doing crazy stuff like this lately. A couple months ago, or maybe last year, they released Music Freedom, where you could stream Spotify, Apple Music, other stuff, and it wouldn't hit your data. Now they're doing it with streaming video, which is cool. Just crazy. That blows my mind.
Join us in a few weeks when we announce that T-Mobile canceled unlimited streaming because they didn't actually expect people to use unlimited streaming.
Yeah, because somebody streamed 76 gigabytes.
That would be very impressive.
If they stream 76 terabytes, that's nuts.
They had all their streaming apps on at once.
Yeah.
24/7.
Yeah, for like
we'll
a
show
month.
You T-Mobile giving us free stuff.
And that's all I got for Tech You Should Know this week. Tech you should use this week, LutherBot.
So LutherBot is our bot in Slack. And he acts like a normal user, except for he doesn't ever say anything unless you ask him to. So up until now, all he's been able to do is if someone says, hey, Luther, what is John 1:1? It will say, in the beginning, Luther Bot will respond, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was God, and the Word was with God.
I thought you were going to say John 1:1 was, in the beginning, Luther Bot will respond. Nope. No, sorry to all of our friends. Martin Luther was not in the beginning, actually.
No. But yeah, so that's all I did, but I upgraded him to version 2.0 recently, and now he has many things he can do, one of them being translate.
Where can we find LutherBot Tank?
Oh, on Slack. Did I not say he's a Slack bot?
You did say. What is Slack?
Slack is the way that we all communicate together. It's like Facebook Messenger, if you could group people into as many channels as you want and have more fun.
You can. It's called conversations.
Meaning real life conversations?
No, like you can have as many different conversations with different groups of people open in Messenger.
No. Facebook Messenger doesn't even compare to Slack. Slack is like a million infinity times.
Wait. Messenger. Hang on. I never said it was as good as Slack. I'm just saying there's similar functionality in terms of how you can chat with different groups of people.
You're just correcting my failures.
Where can people jump in our Slack?
Slack.techreformation.com.
Slack.techreformation.com.
Yep.
What do they do when they get there, Craig?
There's just a really simple email form. You hit the join button, I think, and then you get sent an email with instructions on how to log in.
All right. If we don't have at least 5 people join the Slack this week, we're quitting Tech Reformation.
Nice.
You keep putting these like ultimatums down that I'm just not on board with.
Just kidding.
Should use later. So tech you should use for this week is LutherBot. Come in and have him tell you Bible, what the Bible says.
You can do whole chapters also.
Yes. Other things that he can now do. He can show any picture from Google Images when you request. He can show you any map from Google Maps. He can send a pug bomb, which is just a ton of pictures of pugs. He can remind you to do things. He will tell you the rules of robots just to make sure he still knows them and will not disobey them. He can translate, and he can show a random XKCD.
Okay, I just had LutherBot post all of Judges chapter 19 in the Slack.
And I'm trying to work out how to make him do a pug bomb, but... Oh, there we go.
Oh, man, there's a little puppy.
How many is it? 7? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Oh, he did 5 pugs right now. Yep.
There's little puppies.
Yeah, you sound a lot like your wife right now, Ben.
I'm sorry. She will love the puppies. She'll freak out. Wait, where is she? Actually, I'm about to do this so that she can see it.
But yeah, I plan on upgrading him a lot more as time goes on. Oh, he can also now give stock information in case you need to keep up with your latest stocks.
I just pug-bombed General, where everyone is.
And now they're introduced. I have not pushed the stock yet. Sorry about that.
There's some really awkward pug photos on there.
Yeah, there's one of a lady. I saw the lady. I'll get rid of that one.
I don't know if you can delete it. Oh, another thing it can do is tell a joke. You guys want to hear a joke?
Yeah, do it.
LutherBot joke. All right, here he goes. What web app was the avian sweet tooth crazy about?
Hootsuite.
Good job, Hootsuite.
Okay, we are going to end every episode of Tech Reformation from now on with a Luther joke.
That's a great idea.
Why did Iron Man cry? He had to face the stark reality of his existence.
That's funny.
Alrighty, well, and so that's a wrap on Tech You Should Use. Come check out LutherBot.
All right, theology from the headlines. This week, an article from Recode came through, which is titled, "The Tech World Moves to and Away from Or." So, in programming, there are two sort of some of the fundamental operators that you can do in, like, conditional statements are and also or. So, like, they evaluate to true or false based on whether or not one or both conditions are met. And then you can also do crazy things like XOR or a bitwise OR. I'll explain those later if anyone cares. The point is, the tech world is moving to and instead of or. Craig, tell us what that means.
What does that mean practically? So I've just got to read a little bit of the article. At a conceptual level, these Boolean logic...
Read it like you're interested, because Derek made fun of us last time.
Yeah, I know. Sorry, Derek. Derek's not here again this week, by the way. We should have mentioned sorry, that Derek. At the start. We're terrible at mentioning what's actually going on.
No, but, it's okay.
No, it's... sorry, I'm just apologizing so that he realizes we haven't forgotten about him. Anyway, I'll just read a bit of the article. It says, at a conceptual level, these Boolean logic operators, which would be the true and false, and or not... not... have arguably been used, albeit more subconsciously, to drive many of the assumptions about where technology products stand and how they might fare when pitted against one another. It's either got to be iOS or Android, a tablet, not a PC, and so on. For many people, it boils down to what is perceived to be an inherent superiority of one solution or one option over another. Of course, in many cases, this has indeed been true. There have been and continue to be many examples of products or technologies far better than their competitors or predecessors because of price, cost, ease of use, or several other factors. As technology products have matured, however, the gaps between competitive solutions have become smaller and less obvious. Sure, you can make reasonable arguments about, say, one technology standard for smart home connectivity, but you're also likely to run into some serious and legitimate rebuttals from the other side. And then it goes on, it basically says that smart devices, consumer services, operating systems, you name it, could all benefit from a much stronger focus on connectivity or at least acknowledged coexistence with other options. So it seems to be talking about the idea that currently the internet is being a little bit held back by that mentality of one or the other, and it's advocating instead for devices from different brands and different sort of ways of doing things coming together and being able to be used side by side.
You want to know who's really good at this?
Good at what?
At being an and. Because of increased connectivity across platforms. You guys are supposed to say who.
I'm thinking, who? Okay, who?
The aforementioned two-stepping drunk octopus.
Google.
Yeah, Google's amazing at this. Like, seriously, if you've ever used Google services across Android or iOS devices, it's really great.
Do they count, though? Because they are one of the two polarities.
Okay, but you would think that, because Apple's one of the two also, and they now have cloud services, but theirs play really poorly up until very recently, and I still would argue they do, with anything non-Apple, you know?
Yeah.
Like, if you ever tried to use iTunes on a Windows PC, it sucks.
Yeah.
Well, iTunes in general sucks, but...
Yeah. But that, I still blame Windows for that, not iTunes.
That's fair. But no, Google does a really good job. I mean, if you hook up, you know, your Gmail or your Google Drive or whatever, it plays pretty nice with pretty much everything.
Mm. True.
Mm. Yeah, I agree. I'm on the... I like the concept of more ands. At first, whenever I was reading this article, I thought it was saying that you need to have an Android and an iPhone. And I was thinking, that's a bit overwhelming.
Yeah, I thought the same thing.
Which seems somewhat reasonable with, like, tablets and phones. Now you could have a tablet that gets all your Android stuff done and a iPhone that gets all your Apple stuff done. But where I started thinking of this and wishing for this mostly would be in the video game world with the Xbox, Wii U, and PlayStation and PC. And you have these four platforms, and they all play different games. It's like, well, I really want this game on a Wii U, and I really want this game on a PS, and I really want this game on an Xbox. So if I really want a game on the PlayStation 4, and I really want a game on the Xbox, and I really want a game on the Wii, I really don't want to buy all three systems because that's a lot of money and I wouldn't play that much video games anyway. So yeah, I've always wished for this kind of different systems is still good because you need competition in hardware. If there's only one piece of hardware, then the prices are going to monopoly and all that bad stuff. But if they had kind of one common language or one common interface that they all shared so that a game could be written once but played on every single machine, that to me is a really good system. And I think that's more what he's talking about here. Do you all agree with that?
Yes.
Cool. I wasn't sure if I was understanding correctly.
Yeah, no, I thought it was what you said at first also, that, you know, I need to have a iPhone and an Android tablet. But, and so I was like naturally very resistant to the idea because, I don't know, for me, I try to have as many Apple things as I can possibly stand just because they play so nice with each other. You know, and the platform lock-in, especially with Apple, is a pretty high gate or high wall. You know, like if you think about AirPlay, for example, which is one of the fundamental things. If you have an Apple TV, a Mac, an iPad, and an iPhone, I don't have all those, but if you do, you can AirPlay, you know, to your Apple TV from any of those devices. You cannot AirPlay from anything else. Like, you just can't. And so if you have a Chromecast, you know, you can do that from various devices. I think even from iPhone now.
Yeah, you can.
So, yeah. I mean, initially I was like, oh, this sucks. But actually, it's pretty great. And I think this is the main point I wanted to make. I think a lot of it is because of the rise of strong third-party services. So, like, last week we talked about cloud storage. Dropbox came up in a conversation that was dominated by Microsoft, Apple, and Google. And then Dropbox. Like, they are just very small compared to those other three, right? But they're a name that everybody knows in the cloud storage space. And I think it's because these third parties, you know, I'm calling them that because they're not the big four or big five, have really grown up quite a bit in providing great services that people want to use over the big guys because the big guys do so much that they don't do any one particular thing very well anymore, some of them. It's interesting. I think it adds to that and thing across platforms.
Yeah, so yeah, that's true. And I think, I think I've always thought it's kind of interesting that Dropbox hasn't been bought out by one of those bigger players, for whatever reason. Maybe they wouldn't want to be, I don't know. But, you know, I don't really enjoy iCloud. And so I've kind of thought, you know, maybe it would work well if Apple bought Dropbox because that seems to be a better system and then just expanded the amount of storage available or whatever at the default level. But I don't know. I guess it's probably good that there's a range of options and they all kind of, they all operate a similar way and people can kind of have the choice. I think one of the issues that comes from this, a more distilled chunk of the article than what I referenced earlier was, it says that the main problem that comes out of this is the thinking that our way of doing things or thinking about things is true and the other way is definitely false. It says that a lot more progress could be made in the technology space in general if there was a recognition that our way of doing or thinking about things is true and the other way is also true, which would mean more interoperability, which is a really long and hard word to say. And there's two things I think I was thinking about this as we were leading up to the episode in terms of Christian worldview. One is that I feel like within within sort of the secular worldview compared to the Christian worldview, that the secular world is already getting pretty keen on the idea of and. So the secular world seems very okay with the idea of not making distinctions and blurring lines and saying, yeah, you can be this, but then you can also be that, or you can make this choice and you can have this as well. You don't need to have distinctions in life that sort of help you make sense of the world. You can kind of blur the lines. And I think we're seeing that with talking about gender and sexuality and all those kinds of things would be one of the big scenarios where that kind of and or just kind of take your pick and change it as you want to go and mix and match different things together. And then I look at the Christian world and maybe in particular You know, within, I guess, even within the Christian worldview, we've got sort of standard evangelical, dare I say, Arminian, for the most part, evangelical Christianity, and then you've got sort of Reformed people, and it seems like sometimes Reformed people go almost too far the other way. So Reformed people are good at making distinctions, but then even within Reformedom, we kind of have arguments constantly about, you know, this person's more Reformed than this person or whatever. And so we can get caught up in this thing of just drawing lines and making distinctions and putting people in boxes. And so I think, not to bring it back to balance again, but I just saw like those two different distinctions between what the world's doing with blurring every single line they can, and then, or at least when it suits them. And then what Christians are doing, which a lot of Christians, I think, do sort of straddle that thing of being able to sort of pick and choose their Christianity or the bits that they want to pay attention to from the Bible and that kind of thing. And then you've got other groups of Christians who are very much, you know, this and not that. This is right and that is definitely wrong. And this doctrine, you know, this is the only way that we should be thinking about this and not the other way. So, I don't know. What do you guys think about that?
Dude, I saw a post in the pub the other day. Like, okay, I don't know if you guys... okay, you like, we're in the pub. Facebook does this thing where when there's a group like the pub where there's so many posts that I don't read them all, which is why everyone should use Slack, by the way. It notifies me when something is posted by my friends, or it notifies me when some post has like 100+ comments and thinks I'll be interested in that. Okay, it doesn't happen very often, you know, so maybe once a week. Well, I got one yesterday or even today, I don't remember, of this guy who was saying that you're not Reformed unless you subscribe to the confessions, like Westminster or 1689, and you have to subscribe substantially also. So, like, that really grinds my gears.
But that's always that's always been the case. And we don't want to hate on the Reformed Pub. We love the Reformed Pubcast. We love that community. But
yeah, we are Reformed. We love Reformed people. But sometimes Reformed people are hard to love. That's all I'm saying.
And
I know I'm hard to love, okay? It takes one to know one. I know. But I'm just saying, when you're like taking people's Reformedness from them for fun or whatever it is, I don't know. It's just like, you know, come on, man.
There's a few things about that though. Like I said, I think that's been the case for a long time, and I have the same frustration when guys like Piper, for example, gets torn down fairly, or not torn down, but you know, bagged publicly often because he's not Reformed enough. So he's not to the right level of Reformed. For example,
I don't know anybody on the national stage who I agree with everything on.
Well, that's the thing, exactly. So every single person, but there's so many people in Reformed internet land who believe as if their current understanding on a particular doctrine is, like I said, the absolute only correct one. And even if there's someone who's much, much older than them and has studied the Bible for a lot more years and has good, solid reasons for believing what they do about that particular thing, this person will still go, no, I'm right, definitely, and they're wrong, definitely.
I mean, the point is, people are so... You know, it's funny because, as Calvinists, we, like, talk about how we're the only ones who actually have a real grace, you know? Like, you actually didn't do anything to earn salvation.
So
you know,
true.
You didn't. You didn't believe strong enough. You weren't smart enough. Like, no, it was actually all of grace. There's nothing good in me. Everything about me is completely and totally corrupt.
You didn't make a spiritually smart decision.
Right.
Off your
and
own
so,
bat.
Yeah, it's all of grace, and we actually know what that means as Calvinists. And I appreciate that. I really do. But it's like... You can really see who feels like they've been forgiven much by the way they treat other people.
Yeah, that's good. That's good.
And, you know, we claim to be grace people, and then we just have none for anybody. It's like, you weren't always Reformed. I was not raised Reformed, and I went through a cage stage. Like, I get it. I'm probably still on the tail end of that. But, like, what do you have that you did not receive? And if you received it, why do you boast?
Yeah, and I think there's an issue with also just... people not being able to, and this is something that I think Apologia have talked about as well, like just being able to disagree as adults and say, like, you know, you have that opinion, you've got that view of something, you've come to that view, let, you know, if we want to disagree, let's disagree respectfully. Like, I think there's just this thing of, if someone disagrees with me, I need to take them to task to show them how dumb they are for not agreeing with me. And I just think it's a ridiculous way of handling any situation, but in particular as Christian brothers and sisters, like, why would we behave that way?
I see that kind of behavior a lot from my... and I don't mean to make a comparison here, other than the type of behavior that really bothers me, which is, especially on Twitter, from some of my people who were really close friends with me in years past, before I was converted, who are maybe more atheistic or more secularistic, or even sometimes just more like super politically liberal. You know, it's like, if you don't agree with me, not only are you an idiot, but you're foolish for like holding the view you have. And like, it's like, really, do we really think that? Because I can remember when I thought that way about some of the things I believed. And like 4 years before that, I believed totally different things. It's like, it's like, come on.
And there's the other side of that, of course, is that people don't seem to realize, either they don't seem to realize or they just don't care. And what really grinds my gears is when I come across someone in, for example, the Reform Pub, who just really doesn't care. But what they're actually doing, so say it's confessionalism, and again, we have nothing against the confessions. Les put out a post in the Reform Pub saying that, you know, it is a group that is moving, you know, generally more and more towards agreeing with the confessions, and so if what you're in there for is to bag the confessions, then that will cause issues.
Yeah, I'm not. I believe the 1689. Yeah, and I would subscribe to it.
Exactly,
for the record.
And so that's not what we're getting at. But what I think some people don't realize, or they just don't care, is that they're making their stance, they're making their convictions and what they're holding dear and saying is definitely right look bad in the way that they're behaving as a Christian who holds that position. So if you're confessional, totally fantastic. You've read the Bible, you understand it as far as you understand, and from what you've studied, it agrees with what some very wise people in the past summarized it to be in the confessions. Excellent. But if you then take that as a stance or a platform on which you from there, not just talk to and have discussions with, but openly are just criticizing and tearing other Christian brothers and sisters down, then what are you actually doing to the image of someone who is supposed to be becoming more like Christ?
Yeah, it's funny because one of the great things about Protestantism, and I would say, you know, biblical Christianity, is that we don't have to have infallible teachers besides God and His Word, you know? And it's like when you subscribe to the confessions in this way that if people don't, they're not saved, you're like, you're building up infallible teachers. And if you really want to go that route, we can talk about what the church fathers believed, because they had some really weird views, like some really weird views on different things. And like, none of us believe some of those things today. Okay, Tank, what do we do to have unity across like denominations or different, you know, maybe flavors of Christianity, whatever you want to call it? What do we do? Because we should be and not or.
Man, I was going to say something on what we were talking about, though.
Oh, go ahead.
I don't want to answer the question. Although, okay, so I have this joke that I've always wished I would be able to say, but I can never phrase it in a really good way. But I'll try and just explain it, because I can explain the concept, but I can't just say it in a way that's like, oh, that's concise and funny. But the concept is, I see someone on Facebook and they're like, man, Christians these days are blah, blah, blah. They suck for this reason, whatever. And they make fun of Christians. And so I want to say something like, I really want to have a status saying I don't like, so this is the status, this is the Facebook status. I really want to have a Facebook status saying how much I don't like it when Christians get on to other Christians on Facebook. But I can't without being a hypocrite. Something like that.
Yes.
And you understand what I'm saying? Because if I'm getting onto those Christians for having Facebook statuses that are getting onto Christians, I'm just a Christian who's getting onto a different Christian. So that's the joke. And so I've always wanted to try and make it concise and funny. But anyway, I just wonder if So what I was thinking about just now is, like, are we
are you rebuking Craig and I right now on Tech Reformation, Ted?
I was just thinking, are we doing the same thing right now? That was my question. Because as I was listening, it's like, how can things were said such as, how can we, how can you have these thoughts and calling other Christians dumb? It's just ridiculous, you know? And it's like, well, that's, you just called the thoughts ridiculous. And so, I don't know, it's just a thought.
I think like, you're right.
Are we just making that those polar opposites and just pushing ourselves to the opposite side and doing the same things they're doing? I don't know.
I can see where you're coming from, and I think Ben was clear in his admission that he might still be a little bit cage stage, and I would have to be honest and say the same thing. And none of us in this podcast have ever claimed perfection, so we're not above anyone else in terms of our
agreed.
Sin, like, we're all sinners saved by grace.
And frankly, so, we decided we had way too many subscribers, and so we needed to make some of you mad and quit listening. That's what it is.
That's fair.
And so, yeah, I think within that, like, I think there's a difference between, and it's something that you know, the whole constantly reforming, constantly being, I guess, sanctification being an ongoing process. I've been trying over the past year, I guess, to get a lot better at that. When I was really a brand new Calvinist, I did have a few internet debates where I was just like, it's not edifying to me, but I can really clearly tell, even from what I've said to other people, that it's not glorifying Christ. And so I'll admit that and I'll own that and repent of that. But I think that doesn't, the old quote comes to mind: in essentials, unity, in other matters, liberty, and all things charity. Just that idea of, like, Ben said, as Christians, we should be and I think for the most part, that's true. We should be working out how we can have unity with other believers. Obviously, there's some core things we need to hold to, but I think what we sometimes try and do is make everything a core issue, and that's where it becomes.
Yes, that's what I... Yeah.
That's where it becomes great. Dangerous. It just derails, and what you end up doing is getting distracted by the smaller things. And making almost, you know, it's almost one of those things where you make an idol or a massive deal out of what should just be a little sort of point of difference between two different people, two different levels of reform, yeah. Shall we say.
Yeah, so Tank, in response to your question, two things. One, thank you, brother, for caring enough to say that. I appreciate it. And two, I would say... there definitely has to be a place in our theology for rebuke or for reacting against somebody who's got it wrong. Mm-hmm. Somewhere. There definitely is, because Paul says the scriptures are profitable for rebuking, mm-hmm. or correcting. You know, and obviously we see Jesus a lot. He seems to be going around rebuking people. And if you think about the people he was rebuking, you know, it's not... Well, I'm not going to get into that. Anyway, he did it. And so the point is... you know, there are times when it's appropriate. And I don't know if this was one of those times. Maybe it wasn't. Maybe you're right. And that's fine. But there definitely are times. And so, I don't know, it's something to think about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're right. I agree. It definitely consideration needs to be made on the way it's done.
Agreed.
But I don't want to say it has to be like face to face, because Jesus wasn't always rebuking the Pharisees face to face. So
true. Yeah. Sometimes he talked about them when they weren't even there.
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't want to say it has to be always like in person, although that's what I would lean towards. But
sure.
Yeah, it definitely needs to be well considered. And I don't know. I wouldn't say you're all the way that it was went about was terrible. I was just thinking it during it, and that... Facebook status I've always wanted to make comes to mind.
Yeah. I will say one of the things Doug Wilson has said, which I really appreciated, and that he says a lot of controversial things. I'm not endorsing everything he says. But one of the things he says is sometimes it's okay to mock a set of beliefs and not the person. So, you know, some people hold to ridiculous things. And I think it may be okay to mock or rebuke the things that are being held to and think about, like, what is really being said here, and do we really believe this, where you're not actually attacking the person who holds them. And, I mean, I didn't name any names, and I wouldn't. I don't have anybody in particular in mind. But really, it's more the action and the mindset that I think is the root of that kind of behavior that I'm really speaking against, more so than any specific person. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I would definitely agree. If I had somebody in mind that I had something against, I would want to take that to that brother one-on-one, face-to-face. Like you said, I think that's great.
Yeah, that is the biblical principle, isn't it? And I think just an interesting one, Tank's got something else to say, but I was just reading through the Beatitudes, and Matthew 5, verse 9 is, "Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called sons of God." So, I don't know. I think that's pretty powerful. You know, that's one of the hallmarks of really becoming more like Christ, is that you are in it for, or you are looking for peace rather than division. And so, yes, you know, do some rebuking when it's necessary. If there's a case for, what does Doug Wilson actually call it? Is it like righteous mockery or something?
Yeah.
He's got some term for it. But then, you know, that's okay. But knowing that the goal for us is actually, or part of the goal for us as believers is to be peacemakers, to be those who are bringing peace and unity within the body rather than just enjoying divisions for the sake of divisions. I think that's where I'd
land. And hey, how about this to blow your mind at the end of this segment? You said peacemakers, blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called sons of God. We are called sons of God.
Correct.
That's pretty insane.
Yeah.
Okay, maybe that's not the right word. Crazy, like hard to believe, like awe-inspiring, I don't know, beautiful, amazing, that we were once enemies of God and now we're called sons. And that literally will never get old.
And so the challenge there is to, correct me if I'm wrong, to live a life worthy of the calling or in line with the calling that
you know,
that we've received. And so if that's our new status in Christ, that we are sons of God, then we should live like that.
That is a great place to close this one out. All right, you guys got any recos?
Yep, I do. Is it my turn? Do I go first?
Yes, go first.
All right, mine's really quick. We announced last week that my wife and I are expecting a baby next year in May. So I am recoing an app called Daddy. It looks like a mustache with a dummy, like a baby's dummy or a pacifier or whatever you call them in America. It's cool. It's got daily tips, weekly tips, a timeline, and tools where you can have like a list, to-do lists and hospital bag lists and baby names and stuff. So it's cool. It's good. So if you're expecting a child, check out the Daddy app.
Nice. My reco is the Android-only app called Google Opinion Rewards. What this does is you sign up for it, answer a few questions, and then they will randomly send you surveys that are 3 multiple choice questions long, and they give you like anywhere between 30 cents and 50 cents to spend on the Google Play Store. So it's really just, it's maybe once a week, you'll get this random survey, fill it out really quick, not even think about it. And then over time, once again, as I have many recos that do this, you just very slowly build up a tiny bit amount of money. And then since I'm the type that buys a $7 sandwich, but then I look and see a game on the App Store for $1. I'm like, oh, can I really handle this dollar? Well, now that I have Google Opinion Rewards, it's, yeah, you just get, I have $5 that I can spend on nothing else but apps. So if you're an Android user, check that out. Google knows enough about you already. A little bit more won't hurt you.
You are very thrifty. That which I think true. Makes you a good steward of the gifts God gives you. That is great. I will recommendate...
That's not a word.
Oh, I will recommend... there's no chomping this week. I will recommend Hamilton, the musical. It's a new musical on Broadway. It's really great, like super amazing, like high quality. And it is a hip-hop musical, but it's actually not lame. It's about Alexander Hamilton and the revolution from Great Britain, American Revolution. It's awesome. So check it out. I have Apple Music, and so I downloaded it to my phone, and I've been listening to it. I haven't even gotten to the second disc yet, because there's so many on the first disc that I like. Some language there, if that bothers you, so just FYI. It's really not too much. I think I've only heard like 3 words, but just FYI, if that's something you struggle with, then maybe it's not a good reco for you. But it's definitely high quality, and I've enjoyed it. All right. How can people contact us?
One way we've already mentioned is the email ask@techreformation.com. Send us question, feedback, comment, whatever.
And you can also check out our website, techreformation.com. Pretty easy. But that's where we post all the new episodes, and you can also go and leave us a comment there if you wanted to. Through the contact form or whatever, and we'll get back to you.
And you can follow us on Twitter at Tech Reformation, or on Facebook, also at Tech Reformation. Time for a Lutherbot joke.
Why is Super Smash Bros. Melee the best game ever?
Well, it is the best game ever.
Don't you know? What, you didn't grow up and go to high school at the exact same time as me?
That's not even a joke.
That's just... Luther never played Super Smash Bros. This has been Tech Reformation. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Different joke. That was so bad. What do you get when you cross a motorcycle with an SUV? Dead.
That one's funny.
That was a better one. That was his better.
That was a good one.